So I'm going to share three of the poems. They're very short that were published in the anthology. And again, I appreciate the audience as well as our editors, and it's really great to be in a space like this one. The first one is called Stem and Root, and it is rooted in the experience of one of my mom's friends who is Chinese-Canadian, and one of her ancestors, an elder, was working on the Trans-Pacific Railroad in Canada. So this is his story. One of the reasons behind his longevity, he lived to be over 100, was the fact that he ate raw garlic. So that was very memorable to me as a child. Ma ate garlic raw, the peels whispering down his trousers, acrid petals blooming at their night camps. It pinched his nose, punched it like a thief. The brothers called him stink breath, bulb head, medicine mouth, green stems, and would not sleep. Face to face, as they leaned on stumps in the Sierra Nevada forests, darkness so public, pubic thatch thick, that among the trees they felt like minnows thrashing in a dry sock net. Remembering the cruel, smooth angles of women left behind, or so they imagined, one night, one week, 1 month wives, mothers perhaps now, in the smoking darkness, lost names, each star a letter, a joint that aches, in a cosmos of bones and steel ribs, each city a pelvis where fortune turns amniotic, or rolls in dice, spots like ice or flecks of pepper stirred in someone else's clear hot broth. He never complained about hands that couldn't unfurl from a hammer grip, or back that quivered during the arching stream of hot morning water, steaming up an orange mossed stone. He lived one day short of 99, riding a train aloft in the sky, racing through Vancouver, saltwater city, with a small sack, almost scrotal, red plastic, loaded with good garlic bulbs, 50 cents each, fastened to his belt with a shiny, hiker shiny hook, as if he were still scaling mountains, laying dust tracks, fresh tracks, lost tracks, and they still waited for him beyond the gray sea, frothed with frost, seeking again the green stems of youth, the dependably stubborn, root stink of life. Thank you. So the second poem I actually wrote when I was working, I think when I was going to school actually at the University of Alberta, which is in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. A student, he was South Asian, so Indian Canadian, had committed suicide, and his body had been retrieved in the North Saskatchewan River. He was a mathematics student, and once you read the reflections of students and friends and colleagues, again, a lot of pain. So this poem seemed to come out of that experience. I didn't know him, but just the loss of someone evoked this poem. It's called They Found the Body. Perhaps we are sojourners all, you, she, and I, moored like thin-shelled barnacles to the backs of whales, wreathed with myths of painful creation and conjugation with animal spirits. There are no miracles in these cold northern rivers where teens have flicked their spent smokes. Our River Jordans are lineups in Times Square, the sweat of girls at Studio Sutra, bowing down in their $100 yoga gear and tossing their arms and ears to shake the gold-plated elephant and Hamsa trinkets. If not adrift, we are more or less frozen. But there are tadpoles and sturgeons with secret eyes moving in the warmth beneath. Only water striders walk on water, buoyed up by beds of soft molecules. But this is in spring. We are not yet there. These transparent chains, vibrating, almost sentient, slide so easily down the throat or up a flower stem. Death by water has lost its poetry this time. Requiescat in pace, friend. May you calculate the contours of heaven, which are really just imaginary numbers and indivisible. Like that rind of honeydew that you ate for the first time at the campus diner and texted me, this shit is sweet. Thanks. And this final poem is called North Atlantic. It's very short. So actually, this came to mind. I wasn't thinking about Asian experience at all. My doctoral schooling was actually focused upon African American literature and culture. And the poetry book that came out last year was about a Dominican American poet. So this particular poem was inspired by transatlantic slavery. So I'll read this last. it's called North Atlantic. And who quenched your thirst with black sweat turned warm amber, a colder continent's sugar tit tantrums? Who beat the cream and bent them over to bear the sick churned sweetness for their clotted cream and beige milk tea? Whose bare backs were baked brown, stripped red, made porkish lean and salty for so, so little? You stand tall, stand down, sit up, crouch, that we could wear each other's shirts, your skin, my sweat, twisted into a maple syrup, cane sugar, supplication, wrung out, steeped, swallowed with a tart, spunky lemon rind. Waxy sheen, fringed with a blunt, burnt mouth, bitter feeling, suckling a stone pacifier anchored to the frozen ocean, being reeled in, tasting gold hooks. Thank you.
So I'm going to request, like at classical music concerts, you just wait for the end to clap, because, you know, it's so awkward when you're that one person, you know, clapping in the midst of something. So anyway, the piece that I had, I'm not going to read it because it's a bit long and it's prose, but it's about the situation where my mom, you know, lost Facebook for a day and she was wrecked because that became like her connection to her entire social life, even though she has a low level of literacy. So it's fascinating what technology can do in terms of connecting first generation to the old world. Meanwhile, I want to read a poem. So I talk about writing poems. Anita, who did an interview with me, talks about me writing poems and personas, and they're generally inspired by my mother. So there was an incident where she said, you know, she tried to write "good luck, honey," but she misspelled it and ended up writing "good luck, homie." So this poem is actually about that. It's called "Good Luck, Homie." You know my life good. Now I know like I happy. I use the Skype, Facebook, and I'm not alone. I take the picture, put on the Facebook, and everybody like it. I not know how to read before, but now I'm good. How you write beautiful? I want to write when I see the picture. My friends say, "How are you? Look good, sister." That how you spell? Oh my God, I never know. Now I know. I learned so much from you. You see, honey, you my good luck. You want to do some snaps? That's cool. Oh, sure, fine. Do whatever the fuck you want. This is going on video, yeah? This one's called "A Daughter in Waiting." So because a lot of you are Asian, you get the whole, like, you know, the titles, right? So in Cambodia, it's super strong. You know, not just an aunt, you're an older aunt or a younger aunt. depending on the relation to your parents, right? Which is so annoying because, you know, you don't want to take the wrong guess, right? So I was waiting for my mom to tell me growing up, like, you know, is this an om or is it a ming, right? So it's called daughter in waiting. Ma. I'm watching for cues to know who is older, who is younger, more ancient, whose legs I can't cross over, whose head I must bow lower when I walk past, who deserves more respect, who is a brother, who is an uncle, ancestor, royalty, teacher, wearing titles that hold entire relationships, that determine worlds of dynamics, shift rooms and expectations, how much to widen the circle, how robust. I'm waiting, ma, for you to tell me if this woman is your elder or junior, if I should see her as my sister or aunt. I'm watching as you respond to different titles from others, but you are my mother, so ma, tell me how to connect. And, okay, this is like the poem I read at all the meetings. It's called, At Least Prostitutes Bring Home Money. Direct quote. Why you come home late in the dark? You wear the dress, the stupid big boot, no job. Where the money you want me, say, at least prostitute bring home money. What you want for dinner, noodle again, yeah, you like your big noodle. Don't worry about freckle, American men like that. Go to college, get married, then work, bring home money. I bring home money from hotel tip. You see my shoe, only $10 on sale at Macy. Hey, your period not come yet, don't worry. We take care of it. Your daddy say, he's so sad, you're not sleeping. You know why? You go out. Your brother visit work on his day off. He not even bring home money. My whole life, you never know who I am. I work too hard, but all my children hurt me. And your daddy sent his family all the money I bring home. Those are pretty much all quotes, direct quotes from my parents. And I think the last one I'm going to read, it's the last one in my book. It's called Don't Let Your Heritage Be Past Tense. So much of this is a legacy I want to leave behind for my child. Think of your great-grandmother in woven silk, countless threads through her hands weaving lines, intersecting her face and palms, her children who compose your motherland fabric. Songsters of Cambodia's golden age, Rosrei Sutiasin Sisam Mut Bengran, blare from past decades in static, singing across time through a rusty accordion. We have numerous words for eat, see, nyam, ho, chan, isa, each bite is love. Ye asks if you are hungry because it took 30 years to say I love you like an American. You imagine a future not yet past of grandfather's garden in Georgia, untended in the southern red clay where fruit trees have taken root. Someday you will taste dragon fruit on par with his on the streets of Phnom Penh. Ba's face is bright when he sees you enjoy its flesh, studded with seeds. He says, I wish I could be here when the apple trees bloom. Thank you so much.
First poem that I'm gonna read is in anthology, The Cost of a Breath. I think I'm gonna tell you about a little bit of the background. There was like, I was remodeling the home, and then I have like this wood at the home. Like, you know, you have to be accumulated. And it didn't, like, it has to be like stretched, and then has to be a new room temperature. Things like that, it has to be stayed like 1 month or something. Finally, watching that, like finally I didn't do it, but watching that is sort of, I cannot breathe. And then with problem with the constructor, and as being an Asian woman, you need to be smile and nice. But when I said, no, this is not right, and then he just turned around and then against me. And so that's how this poem came. So I wanted to share with you. The cost of a breath. Talk about the wood. stack high in the living room. What it cost to breathe in my home. Raw wood, oak, so long and thick. A dead elephant stretched wall to wall. He said to accumulate takes time and more money. Hardwood, slow to open, to breathe. 1 week, became a month, became a year. I couldn't breathe. A pile of plants, unstable, forlorn, it had to go. I want to speak my mind instead of a smile. Nice girls don't speak their minds or question men how dare it is to breathe. It is not just that part, but like being an immigrant is how it related and then how we cannot speak our own mind. Second poem is Confronting My Father's Mistress. 1. 10 years after he died, I phoned her. I could finally call him Bastard in English. 2. 여보세요, she said in Korean. Can we talk? I asked in English. She said, I have no customers now. I swore. How did you meet my father? I hear the train passing. Through a friend, she said. Liar, I heard you're engaged. Your fiancé was in army. Your hairdresser in our own hometown. You knew my father was a married man. Rode a bicycle baby girl in the basket. You met my father in nightclub. After that, someone sent milk and bread to my beauty shop every morning. You came to our home, I said. I was only 7. 3. It was a Children's Day in May. My father's mistress, dressed in strawberry with a vanilla hat. My mom served her tea in my dad's old socks. Gently tucked my father's ashtray next to his fold pajamas. Only the smell of his benzene and hedges remained. The neighbors watched, excited to see blood play their roles. Your mother invited me. I am his wife. There are his children. You must stop. You didn't, I said. Now I am a mother, a wife, a woman too. You told my mother. She makes love to emptiness. How can I forget my mother's losing her mind? A crazy morning animal. I was 14. Our daughter was born. She needed her father beside her, she said. 4. My father robbed my older sister's first name, John. Give it to her, child. Half of my name cut off for her, child. I fell. I can't say it. 5. My daughter will be alone when I die. 6. You stole my dad. You stole my name. You stole my childhood. 7. Too much silence. I hear howls of my mother's their buried sorrows and their thousands of years hung. I hang up the phone. The last poem that I wanted to share is the excerpt of Comfort Women. Comfort Women, on August 14, 1991, in Seoul, a woman named Hak Soon Kim came forward to denounce the Japanese for the sexual enslavement of more than 200,000 women during World War II. They were referred as Wiyeonbu in Korean and Comfort Women in English. In 1939, Jinju, South Gyeongsang Province. We're going to Sanambari, right? No, Jeongsinde, women's labor corps. Same thing, right? Earn money, become new women, come back home. Holding tiny hands, red fingertips, 봉숭아, blossom flower red, together and colored by summer sand, red fingertips, ripening persimmons, bending over choga roofs that fade into distance when the truck across over the last hill, leaving our hometown in the dust. Sunja kicks up her white shoes, Komushin. 1941, that autumn. The autumn night Japanese soldiers wield a sword, drags me away while I was gathering pine needles. They fell from my basket, filling the air with the scent of white blood. When you scream in your dream, there's no sound. Grandma making songpyeon, the maru, is water boiling? Will she bring pine needle before my eyeballs fell out? I feel pain there. They put me a long stick between my legs. Open up, open, bakkachosenji. They rage, spring, their spoon, the smell of a burning dog, burning life, panting, grunting on top of me, under my blood, I am dying. 1943, Shanghai, China. One night, a soldier asked all the girls, who can do 100 men? I raised my hand. Sunja did not. The soldiers put her in boiling water, alive, and fed us. What is living? Is Sunja living in me? Thank you.
Thank you again for having me. So I'm going to first read the anthology as well, and then something new I'm working on. And I wrote these sonnets, well, when I first got to the U.S. for college, I took a poetry workshop and I hated it. Like, my professor kept asking me to write sonnets and I just didn't get it. Like, I was like, what's IM? But I don't get rhyme. And I just stopped writing poetry for 3 years after that. And then before I graduated undergrad, I took another class with Mary Chin and she showed me like ways to subvert the sonnet. So then these came out in there. My father caught my tongue to say, six estranged sonnets. E. The English language spoken in a slight translation is made foreign to itself. My professor asked me about the plight of my birth language, the secret vault on my tongue, no longer of my mother, its anchor swallowed whole by a white whale and dragged toward the stories of a creator who taught me the meaning of betrayal. I look for familiarity and poetry, images and sounds written in strange lilts, the space in between louder, more gravity than these words built dead on stolen gold stilts, above an ocean salted with sunken tongues, concealing the echo of mermaid songs. R. My father took scissors and cut the flesh that anchored my tongue to the floor of my mouth, just so I could flip the slight lilts, say R instead of A, G instead of D, regurgitate the moons, geese, wars, loves of dead poets. Did he know this cut would allow me to say sir instead of see, here, 20 years after? Every 3 years, my tongue grew back, stubborn, stronger, red like Guangong's anger, and when my words began to slip and slur, he held my head back with one hand, cut, cut, cut. The third and final time, I remember the taste, a rootedness, untethered, gone. Sen, my friend tells me that diasporic poets writing away from home are inevitably chained to words like tom, land, mother, on making themselves into worn tales of homecoming, exile, strangers, selling themselves for blue-eyed recognition, building a traitorous home from stolen metaphors, accents, voices that echo a no belonging, a no trespassing until the body is left behind. I am told bilingual children are smarter, learning at birth to carry two languages, the first of home, the second of exile, tucking beneath the tongue, the self. In between one, E, and two, R, infinity screeches, silent, beyond the tip of arrival. Si. There are words I dare not speak in daylight, conjuring grammar books, English teachers, restless in death, waking to seek the light in my teething grapple of lie versus lay versus lame. Past perfect, they whisper, is beyond the present, ungrounding me from time, crossing over tomorrow into yesterday, into what has been and what never will be, sweeping memories into reversal, burying mispronunciations inside termite nests, unnaming the collapse of my existence until I gingerly misspeak my own name. Plagued by its aftertaste, I lick the stomach of an open honeybee. Ooh. The lure of the English language is its alphabetic certainty, the orderly curve of each letter contained within the weight of its own breath, tied by cursive so thin I feel the pull of an umbilical cord pre-separation, untangling without law, linking myself to an ancientness whose life announces my own, returning me to that first inkling of sound, a persisting hotness wrapped like skin, uniting throat with foot, crying with kicking, sound with being. I hear the murmur of voices that never become, syllabic breath gush half in, half out. Liu. To underraise the number of death, I slither si between the crevices, wait for the gods to turn against me with each tabooed count of si, four, and si, death. The fateful rhyme slap out of my girlhood lips, so I learn the dead cannot be called into homes, banished outside the doorway of language, from the words of the living. Yet, words unspoken do not forget. Within the repetition of four, I count to the slow dying of my namesake, a poem, Ming Dynasty, uninherited by English. Jing Jing sings today, today, a shadow side by side with herself, my own ringing echo. Work I'm working on. It's called Two Red Dust, and it's quite long, so I'm just going to read a few sections. These are more like prose poems. Under the cover of night, I read about the forbidden in a language my parents do not speak. My father is not looking at me because he is driving. Our world is red dust, he explains, preparing me for the master. The master speaks slow, a mantra from the book with a lotus flower. Foreigners gather at his feet. My father says, put your English to use. I make up a poem about rivers flowing into our lives, and then we all turn to bubbles. They clap and task me to do all future translations. I feel not too guilty because the master only speaks in metaphors. My mother hides in the bathroom and angrily whispers, "They are swindling you." But she can't say that out loud because what if his powers are real? A master from her home province entrapped disbelievers in a room full of snakes. It's true. All the newspapers says so. Of course, my mother says, "You are taking his side." Static. In the dark of a theater, the mother's body is too close, so close it vibrates, blurs into shapeless color. The filmmaker recites her hope, her mother's words. The naked blood body of her mother, forbidden imagery. The filmmaker is too close, unrelenting in her nearness. A lump hardens in my mother's breast. In the hospital bed, she sees a vision of Yesu through the white screens, the singing white savior her grandmother talks story to her into magic streams that ran through my mother's childhood. She blows dust off her grandmother's Bible, and the three of us are baptized in the upstairs bathtub. I decide to go first. My mother wakes singing, her voice being clear as a girl. 6 a.m., her singing wakes us to her schedule of walks and organic foods and the desire to live. This is not the first trip people have mistaken me as his lover. Two beds he and I stress when they write down our shared name. The first time it happens, we're on a beach in Bali. I'm 14 and just beginning to feel okay in the bathing suit stretched tight across my chest. My father goes to the bathroom and leaves me haggling with the surf shack men. "Your boyfriend," they wink. I stutter, blood rushing upwards and pooling in my head. Static. The filmmaker's father finds her filming her mother in the bathroom. A father's rage, a husband's envy. Her mother says, "It's as if you have trespassed on his property." My mother is learning to live in a body less woman than mine, but my body is hers, her arm is my arm, her eyes are my eyes, and her new concave hardness my own. "You are the reason I will live," she says. I grip the shower head and sponge her off carefully, rinsing away the streaks on her face. The second time it happens is also the third and the fourth. We're sitting in a restaurant, a table for two, the candle twitching between us. We're at a pool, we're checking in, we're at his college reunion. My daughter, he clarifies. My father chases me up the stairs with a house key. I'm 7. In our new apartment, my own room, we're racing. He presses the key into the back of my pants. I screech, laughing, breathing hard, taking the stairs two at a time. This is our game. Then I get older and stronger and ashamed. I run faster so he can't reach me. The forbidden word cries to her mother, who does not hear her because she does not exist in the language of this household. She is the meat dripping thick oil, is my mother moving between the pork and my half-nibbled bowl, filling me until my body knows she is seeing me. At times so sour, I suck in my jaws, retreat inside myself, let the syrup roll off my tongue and down my throat like tapioca bubbles before I've had the chance to swallow. I say the forbidden to my parents in a different language, tracing its etymology back to the stories they were once told, where they came from, who they were, who they can be, my father as my father and my mother as my mother, because they were before they were either those things, before they became they, before him and her and boy and girl, before the wanting existed for an I. Silence swells, splintering out from beneath the table legs, from beneath the paint and window ledges, blooming into the space between us until it is all there is, all there can be. We breathe in its cotton body, catch figments of its hair with our own. The forbidden word bows to her master, who shaves all her hair, lights an incense to blacken three dots on the top of her newly sleek head. "Chu Jiala," the master announced, "you have left home. You have joined us." The master strips the word off her name, tossing it behind his shoulder into red dust, mouth to mirror, carving name to fog. The three of us in a hotel room, I am trying to change. I hook my bra beneath my shirt. I do not change in the bathroom. I do not want to change us, to offend my father, my mother, to see my changing body in the mirror. As if I am not of my father's body. I do not want to change. I do not want us to change. When I say words out loud, they become real. Under the rising cover of night, I lift the forbidden from my mouth.
All I can say is this was really wonderful. It's very empowering to be in a community of women and to be able to communicate and talk about issues that I know resonate with all of us. And some of the poetry that I just heard is haunting. I have no doubt that I won't be able to get it out of my mind. And it's always, for me, also very powerful to connect with women of a younger generation. So we had a little bit of that discussion with some of you about generation. And so I think I might be the age of a lot of your moms. And there to listen to the voices of my daughters when I hear you is very powerful. Thank you very much for all being here. And I hope that we continue this community. And we're here to support you in any way we can.
I think we had a great representation from all, you know, different disciplines. We all come to feminism and diaspora from a different school of thought and different training, different disciplines. But I think we had a great conversation exchanging our thoughts and experiences and trajectories. So thank you so very much for everything, and let's continue our discussion virtually.